Okay, we're now going to finish chapter 15. Nice 13 verses here. 14 verses. We'll go back to chapter 13. Chapter 13 is Dhritarashtra quits home. Vidura has returned from pilgrimage to deliver Dhritarashtra. He's successful. Dhritarashtra leaves, Gandhari leaves with him, Vidura goes with them, Dhritarashtra gives up his body, Gandhari enters into the fire of immolation that his trance of meditation has invoked, and Vidura is feeling both satisfied and very sad. Back in Hastinapur, Yudhisthira doesn't find Dhritarashtra, doesn't find Gandhari. He goes to Sanjaya. Sanjaya feels cheated. Dhritarashtra blames himself. I must have offended my uncle, because his mood of humility was so strong, he was feeling that way. Although his uncle tried so many ways to murder the family, he was feeling, I must have offended my uncle in some way. He's left home at this such old age and blind. And so Narada comes to pacify and explains what has happened. Vidura did what he did. Dhritarashtra did what he did. Dhritarashtra is okay. And don't go to try to find him, because by now he's given up his body. And then in text 50 of chapter 13, Narada gives the hint of what's going to happen next in this whole drama. And that is, Krishna has come to fulfill the request of the demigods headed by Lord Brahma, and he has fulfilled that. And he is awaiting the rest. The awaiting the rest is the withdrawal of the Yadu dynasty. And then Krishna will also go. That's it. Krishna's pastimes are over. When that happens, you Pandavas may wait here until the Lord is no longer on the earth. It's just a hint. He doesn't say it in detail, like I said. But Yudhisthira heard that. Now, fast forwarding over to chapter 15, he just heard from Arjuna, Krishna's gone. The Yadu dynasty has gone, and Krishna has gone. O king, as in the ocean, the bigger and stronger aquatics swallow up the smaller and weaker ones, so also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's the stronger aquatic, to lighten the burden of the earth has engaged the stronger Yadu to kill the weaker and the bigger Yadu to kill the smaller. They've gone. And then his absorption in the pastimes of the instructions of Krishna from Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna becomes pacified. So now it's this final section, starting with text 32. It's two main topics. The disappearance of Krishna, philosophically explained. That's where we began. If you recall the very first session. And then also how a pure devotee of the Lord voluntarily gives up their body. Dhritarashtra voluntarily did. Now the Pandavas are going to do. And also Kunti and Draupadi. That's the storyline. So, text 32, reads, upon hearing of Lord Krishna's return to his abode and upon understanding the end of the Yadu dynasty's earthly manifestation, Maharaj Yudhisthira decided to go back home, back to Godhead, having remembered what Narada had said. In the purport of 32, Prabhupada is describing how to philosophically understand Krishna's departure. And he compares Krishna's departure to be like the setting of the sun, as Krishna's appearance is like the rising of the sun. The sun doesn't come into being and go out of being. Just the earth rotates and we can see the sun or we can't see the sun. The sun is always shining. Similarly, Krishna is eternal, and the pastimes of Krishna are eternal, and the form of Krishna is eternal, and sometimes he becomes manifest, and sometimes he withdraws his manifestation. Here's how Prabhupada writes. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that anyone who factually understands the transcendental appearance and disappearance of the Lord by his inconceivable energy becomes liberated from the laws of birth and death and is placed in the eternal spiritual sky where the Vaikuntha planets are. There are such liberated persons. There, such liberated persons can eternally live without pangs of birth, death, old age, and disease. In the spiritual sky, the Lord and those who are eternally engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord are eternally young. Because there's no old age, and no disease, and no death. There's no death because there's no birth. Because there's no material bodies to be born. So there's no birth. And so, attaining the spiritual world is the culmination of devotional service, and that's what Yudhisthira decides to do. He stayed to take part in Krishna's pastimes, and after Krishna's pastimes, for his particular purpose, that purpose was fulfilled. The next verses are also on this topic of Suta Goswami explaining to the sages about Maharaj Yudhisthira's reflection on Krishna's appearance and Krishna's disappearance. And for that matter, Sutta is describing the Yadu dynasty's appearance and disappearance. We discussed this, so this is a repeat. But the repeat is, as Krishna creates the world, the whole cosmic manifestation, he enters within. As he was requested by the demigods, he brought his associates with him. They manifested physical forms. He manifested his spiritual form. And he withdrew himself and he withdrew them. And it's all lila, his coming and their coming, and his departing and their departing is all lila. It's transcendental. It's his internal potency. As he descends with his whole abode, his abode comes and his associates come and his paraphernalia comes. In text 35 of chapter 15, Krishna's appearance is likened to that of a magician. So what do magicians do? They make things appear and they make things disappear. And it's just an appearance. It seems as if something's appearing and something's disappearing. You know, the rabbit in the hat. Here's the hat. There's nothing inside. Look at this. Turn it inside out. There's nothing inside. Then whoop, here comes a rabbit. And then put the rabbit back in the hat and inside and out. There's no rabbit. What happened? He's a magician. I narrated the story that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur described, the magician that made necklace and gold coins and 7,000 horses and all of the king's children and queens and relatives, they just disappeared. So what Prabhupada speaks in the same way. The Lord is Amrita, He's deathless. But He's having a pastime as if He's dying. The deathless dies. What is that? It's an appearance only, like a magician. The magician shows his tricks, that he is cut to pieces. I saw this when I was in high school once. They had a magician come to school. And they did it on stage. You know, here's the box. They had somebody lie down in the box, close the box, and took out the sword and started sawing the box in half. You know, there's the person's hands and there's the person's head. And this end and that end of the box. And oh my God, a bloody scene right on the stage. And, you know, looks like it's murder right on stage. But, you know, then the person came out of the box. Well, how'd they do that? So, sometimes the body is cut to pieces or burned to ashes, just like the magician's story. He sat down in a yogic class. My magic teacher also taught me yoga, so I want to give up my body now in the presence of a saintly person such as you, so I'll get a higher destination. So he sat down and body burst into flames, and all the wives of the magician entered into the fire and they also disappeared. All that was left is a pile of ashes. Or sometimes made unconscious by hypnotic influences. Prabhupada writes in the purport of text 35, but all are false shows only. Factually, the magician himself is neither burnt to ashes nor cut to pieces, nor is he dead or unconscious at any stage of his magical demonstration. Similarly, what to speak of a two-bit magician, the Lord has His eternal forms of unlimited variety, of which, mentioned in text 35, is the Matsya avatar, such as the, so like a magician, like the Matsya avatar He manifests, was exhibited within this universe is also one. But there are innumerable universes. Somewhere or other, the fish incarnation must be manifesting his pastimes without cessation. In this verse, the particular word, text 35, date, meaning eternally accepted, not the word ditva, or accepted for the occasion, is used. The idea is that the Lord does not create the fish incarnation. He eternally has such a form. And the appearance and disappearance of such an incarnation serves particular purposes. So, what's the particular purpose? Pritanaya sadunam vinashaya shaduskritam dharma sangsthapanartaya sambhavami yuge. So Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita about himself. And in fact, that's what he did. This is the reflection of Sutta and also that of Maharaj Yudhisthira and also that of Arjuna. He came for this purpose. Now if the purpose is fulfilled, he's gone. So, Jiva Goswami comments in his Krishna Sandarbha, that when it's describing in this verse 35, that like a magician, Krishna manifests himself, it's not like once upon a time there wasn't Krishna, and then he assumed the form of Krishna, like a costume, and then his purpose was over, and so he left the costume behind and he became Krishna again, or something like that. Rather, Jiva Goswami, it's very nice, he refers to the words in the verse, rupa and Tanu and Kalevara, he assumed this form means he had accepted a particular conception. He was requested by the demigods, please come for this purpose. So he said yes. Having fulfilled that purpose, he gave up the material conception. Okay, now I fulfilled that. I don't have to say yes anymore. And therefore Krishna withdrew that form. He goes on to explain in text 36 that Krishna is manifesting his self-same form, his svarup. He entered the world in his svarup. He left the world in his svarup. He didn't give up a body. So this is to understand the difference between Krishna's departure and a worldly one, a mundane one. Krishna returned in his spiritual body. Is this helping us understand Krishna's departure, Leela? He left behind this Vishvarup, this universal form, after being pierced in the foot by the arrow of the hunter. We discussed this before in our first session. Jiva Goswami, this is translation of Jiva Goswami's commentary or his Anuchet from Krishna Sandarbha. The personality of Godhead, Krishna, manifests his form in this world and then makes his form disappear from the world. It is not that he rejects his form or that it ceases to exist. That's to say, the Lord's form is eternal. Although staying in the material world for some certain time, it is confirmed in text 36, Krishna returned in his self-same form. This is so that we don't, this is to clear up material conceptions and be fixed into spiritual conception. That magician example given in text 35, Jiva Goswami comments on it. That when the fight took place between the members of the Yadu dynasty, we heard a number of things about the Yadu dynasty fight, but this is all, it's not like a mundane fight of this world, you know, cat and dog fight. It's the internal potency of Krishna withdrawing those souls who he had brought. By his internal potency, he is withdrawing them by his internal potency, and one should see it that way. We can see through the eyes of scripture, and the scriptural indication is that it's Leela. Janma karma chane divyam. That's how we should see it. So the departure of Krishna is not ordinary. The departure of the Yadu dynasty is not ordinary. The departure of the Pandavas that we're about to hear is also not ordinary. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in describing all of this, writes that when Sutta was talking about the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty, these are sadhus, and to hear the whole Yadu dynasty was destroyed, it was painful for them. Although they're transcendentalists, they're not thinking, they're the bodies. They're not in material conception. But still, the departure of these personalities was a painful piece of news. So in order to pacify them, Sutta explains, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he assured them that the Lord caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to descend, and he similarly caused them to relinquish their bodies, which had been taken away, by which they had to take away the burden of the world. They came to relieve the burden of the world. They had accomplished that. Now those bodies are being relieved. The Lord and his eternal associates appear on earth to help the administrative demigods in eradicating the burden of the world. Krishna therefore called for some of the confidential demigods to appear in the Yadu family and serve him in his great mission. After the mission was fulfilled, the demigods had to return to their posts. So Krishna made the arrangement. It's not a mundane event, is the message. Transcendental arrangement of Krishna. So, in addition to hearing the news of Krishna's return, Suta Goswami comments that again, Yudhisthira II, he's recognizing following Krishna's departure, Kali is now in full swing. Because he's recognized that from the previous chapter, chapter 14. Kali has its influence upon those who are not fixed in transcendental knowledge. Conversely, those that are fixed in transcendental knowledge may observe Kali Yuga taking place, but they're not affected or infected by it. One is inoculated or protected against the influences of the age of Kali. Maharaj Parikshit Maharaj Yudhisthira noticed the increase in his kingdom of avarice, falsehood, cheating, violence throughout the capital, state, home, and among individuals. Yudhisthira wisely prepared himself to leave home, and he dressed accordingly. That's text 37. Before he left, he took care of leaving his son in charge of the kingdom, grandson, Maharaj Parikshit, and also the grandson of Krishna, that was Vajra. Well, one of Krishna's sons was Aniruddha, and one of Aniruddha's sons was Vajra. So the grandson of Krishna was Vajra, and he was installed as the king of Mathura, or the king of Shurasena. So all this was done in a proper way. He didn't just like scoot out the back door. He took proper care of the kingdom. It would be in the custody of a qualified king. He then performed a sacrifice to enable him to successfully quit household life. Then he did very similar thing as Maharaj Parikshit did later on. He gave up his royal attire and all the symbols, the crown, royal garb, royal belt, and took used torn garments and in effect became mendicant, from a king to a mendicant, just like that. And he headed for the north, the Himalayas. And then he, as did Dhritarashtra prior to him, he sat in a trance of meditation and similar description, the elements amalgamated into one another. It's not like his, you know, video animation, his body dissolved or something into a puddle of liquid substance or something. But he withdrew the elements. Jiva Goswami comments that it's not that they emerged in Brahman, because Brahman is all spirit and material elements are material elements, but rather he withdrew his consciousness from them, because you extend consciousness to do some service. You withdraw consciousness, in this case, to give up the body. And fully concentrate upon Krishna. Dhritarashtra was not able to accomplish full concentration upon Krishna because he wasn't so elevated. But Yudhisthira was so elevated. In the purport for text 42, Prabhupada describes Yudhisthira Maharaja's example. He writes, When one is inclined to become an associate of the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead in one of the innumerable planets in the spiritual sky, one has to think always that he is different from the material energy. He has nothing to do with it, and he has to realize himself as pure spirit, Brahman, qualitatively equal with the Supreme Brahman. But he goes on to say, that's just part. To withdraw consciousness from matter is part. But then to act on the platform of Brahman, that's service to the Supreme Brahman. Then one has to, that one enters into the realm of devotional service. So Yudhisthira was capable of doing like that in the trance of meditation. It's something very similar to what Kapila Dev describes in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. In the process of trance of meditation, the soul engages in devotional service on the spiritual platform in relation to the personality of Godhead, even without moving the body, because consciousness is withdrawn completely from the body. That's elevated, but that's what Yudhisthira Maharaj did. Then the other four brothers, they also noticed, he left without saying anything to them, or to Draupadi, or to Kunti. They noticed he was gone. And they also noticed the symptoms. And they could understand, we should also leave. They heard the same message from Narada, from chapter 13. So they also prepared themselves. And what was their conclusion? The lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna are the supreme goal for all. Therefore, they decided to stop all other activities and just fix their mind upon the lotus feet of Krishna. In pure consciousness, due to constant devotional remembrance, they attained the spiritual sky, which is ruled over by the supreme Narayan, Lord Krishna. This is attained only by those who meditate upon the one Supreme Lord without deviation. This abode of Lord Sri Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, cannot be attained by persons who are absorbed in the material conception of life. This is one of the, there's the two things that are being described here. Detachment and attachment. Detachment from matter and deepening one's attachment to Krishna. But the Pandavas, being completely washed of all material contamination, attained that abode in the very same bodies. We mentioned this earlier. Mahabharata describes something different. And Srimad Bhagavatam describes they attained the spiritual world in their self-same bodies. And then the commentary explains like this. Prabhupada writes, there's no doubt that one can attain the supreme spiritual planet Goloka Vrindavan without change of body. And Jiva Goswami comments in his Sandarbhas that this word Atmana means in their very same bodies. This was possible because their bodies were not material. And so they attained. They were, because of, as you can say, spiritualized, fully absorbed in Krishna's service. Next, Vidura heard of the departure of the Pandavas. And he also witnessed the departure of Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. So he also gave up his body. It's like, you know, dominoes. They're all disappearing. Part of Krishna's plan. Their appearance was Krishna's plan. Their transcendental disappearance is also part of Krishna's plan. Draupadi saw that her husbands, without caring for her, it means something they didn't, oh, forget you. It means they didn't make the arrangement to take her. Why they didn't make the arrangement to take her with them? Prabhupada, in a very famous purport of text number 50, this fly your own plane, the time of death, you have to fly your own plane. Prabhupada would describe, a pilot may practice on the ground. Now they just do it all simulated, electronic, you're sitting there and do and drop bombs and all kinds of things. Then you get in an actual plane, and you're the co-pilot, and there's the pilot. But then you're the pilot. And when you're flying the plane, there may be another plane over this way, but if you have some difficulty, you have to solve that problem because you're the pilot. And so the time of death is like that. Many times Prabhupada would say, there's a Bengali proverb, and your bhajan may be whatever it may be, but it's all tested at the time of death. Where is your consciousness? So we're chanting. We're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. We're in Vrindavan. We're trying to remember Krishna. We may be struggling with this and that, but we're striving. We're endeavoring. How conscious are you of Krishna in the course of that endeavor? Well, that will be tested. There's a final exam called death, and it's pass-fail. If we don't return to the spiritual world, it's not that everything is lost, we have to go back to zero, we continue where we left off. So that's encouraging. Spiritual endeavor is never lost. But just listening to Prabhupada describe this, that a materialist wants to think, I will live forever. And a spiritualist is one who thinks, I may die at any moment. It's not like morbid, it's reality, because we don't know. And therefore, this moment I should be fully Krishna conscious. The next moment I should be fully Krishna conscious. The next moment I should be fully Krishna conscious. This is nice instruction about how to, a pure devotee, how to leave the body. Because leave the body we must. So in this case, the Pandavas are picking the time to leave their body. We don't necessarily pick the time. It's picked for us, selected for us. But there's a disciple of Bhakti Tirtha Swami in Houston who is leaving her body because of cancer. She's young. Well, young. She's in her late 30s, early 40s. And, you know, her body is becoming thin and thin and thin. Practically just, you know, the cancer is eating up her body. And she's in a lot of pain. But she doesn't show it at all. When I was recently visiting there, she's inspiring all the devotees. They come to chant with her, but she's just, you know, giving them such faith in the holy name and transcendental life that they're thinking they came to give her association, and they go away thinking we're getting her association. And because she's giving her association like that, it brings her consciousness above the pain. I just got some word that the doctor that's attending her, a devotee doctor, says she's at the stage where it's, I don't know what you technically call it, but, you know, the light's going out. It's the final stages. And I'm sure from the time that I spent there, I'm sure she's not fearful. She's experiencing something that an ordinary person doesn't experience. She's experiencing Krishna's touching her heart from chanting and serving the devotees and hearing the message of the scripture, the three things that I've mentioned to all of you. That, you know, you can wait until you have noticed that you have cancer and then you get serious. But don't wait. Right away. immediately become a transcendentalist. This is Chanakya Pandit's statement that Prabhupada was referring to. The materialist wants to think, I'll live forever. The devotee is thinking, at any moment, the light could go out. And it's true. Who can say? You know, walk across the street and it's something, the truck comes and runs us over and we're finished. Or we're going back to wherever we came from or whatever the next thing in our journey is of life. Something happens and it's the light's gone. There's no certainty. And one day we're going to wake up when that's going to be the day. And we may not even know what that day is. So it's not to be fearful or morbid, but it's to be alert and attentive. So take the opportunity that is being provided. Such richness the Srimad Bhagavatam is providing us. Certainly the topic is Maharishi Pariksit's curse to die. So it fits in with the theme. But everyone is also going to die. That's certain. And how to prepare our life so that we can be with Krishna. So practice that consciousness now, following Arjuna, Yudhisthira, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadeva, Vidura, these great, great personalities under the guidance of Srila Prabhupada and our founder Acharyas. So, I've been very happy to spend this time with you here in Vrindavan Dham. Shri Krishna Balaram ki, Shri Radha Shama Sundara ki, Shri Shri Gornitai ki, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Nitai Gorpimanandi. Jai.